It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
Quiet, please. Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
You all ready?
Exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. All of this could have been avoided if we'd followed my plan.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
What was it you were saying about my voice?
It's loud, it's strong, and it's good, and I appreciate your support.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
Now, here's Lars Larson.
Be sure and keep that volume up.
On FM News 101.
It's going to be one of the highest rated shows ever.
KXL.
I hope the congressman knows, and I hope all of you know, that my answer to that question, I did not meet with the Russians, was explicitly responding to the shocking suggestion that I, as a surrogate, was meeting on a continuing basis with Russian officials, and the implication was to impact the campaign in some sort of nefarious way. And all I did was meet in my office with the ambassador, which we didn't discuss anything like that. So I just want to say I appreciate the congressman's right. I guess he can say it's free speech. He can't be sued here. And so that's just my response. And I'm sorry that that's my response.
That is Jeff Sessions, who got himself pretty fired up today talking in front of the House Judiciary Committee and very fired up about the very suggestion that somehow he was in league with Russia, that he was communicating with the Russians as a surrogate of the Trump campaign and all the rest of this nonsense. You know, I wonder when the Democrats are going to figure out that the Russian dossier and the whole Russia conspiracy, collusion, nonsense is not going to go anywhere. Or if it does go somewhere, it's going to go to Hillary Clinton. It's going to go to the Uranium One deal, which is now, it sounds like, going to be the subject of an investigation by the Department of Justice. And yes, Hillary could still end up in that orange jail jumpsuit, although it becomes less likely now that she is no longer running for anything. She now has to be running from something. By the way, happy Tuesday and welcome to the Lars Larson Show, live on the Radio Northwest Network, serving Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. The Pacific Northwest gets its Honestly Provocative Talk Radio right here, and I'm glad to have you with me. We have a lot to talk about today, not the least of which is that, but also about the ongoing controversy over the Alabama Senate race. I know that's not in the Northwest, but it does have something to do with the way that politics goes these days. I mean, after all, Seattle has had its sexual scandal involving its mayor, Ed Murray, who is now leaving or has left. We've got Portland, which had its sexual scandals, a number of them involving a member of Congress or two, involving a governor, involving a mayor, and involving others. I mean, remember Tiger Suit Wu? David Wu, the member of Congress who famously appeared in one of those stretchy tiger suits. Yes, he looked great, but he was a sexual freak by my estimation. There were so many things that he was accused of doing, and of course, he finally left. But the question is, when should you leave? If you are accused of these things, if you are Roy Moore of Alabama, should you bow out of the race right now when, in fact, you could actually win it? And if you win it, should the United States Senate seat him? Because those are all open questions right now. We are just about 28, 29 days short of the election that will determine that. Here in the Northwest, should the cops from Shelton, who beat a man badly, a homeless man, they were fired from their jobs, but they are not going to be charged. That word came down today. An investigation found that they had unreasonably beaten the man, but apparently there wasn't enough probable cause to believe that they had committed the crime of assault. Now, I've had plenty of people suggest that I am on the cop's side 100% of the time, and I always caveat that with this. I'm on the cop's side as long as the law and the facts are on their side. In this case, it does not sound like the law or the facts are on the side of the two Shelton police officers who were fired earlier this month because they beat a man, a homeless man who was just sleeping on some steps, And but now they are not going to be charged with any kind of crime. That decision made by the Mason County prosecutor, Michael Dorsey. We will talk about that. The Oregon Supreme Court is being asked to kill a brand new Oregon sales tax on automobiles. Yes, you heard me right. An Oregon sales tax, the kind of tax hated south of the Columbia River just about as badly as income taxes are hated north of the Columbia River. And yet the Oregon legislature managed to do it. And it was only within the last month or so that car dealers and others began to wake up to the fact. Well, now AAA Oregon and some trucking associations have said they are going to come out against this so-called privilege tax that state regulators would like to charge every time somebody buys a brand new vehicle. We'll talk about the crime of strangulation. It's treated a little bit differently in Washington and in Oregon. And apparently the change in how that crime can be charged has resulted in more bad guys in jail and less of the crime, which seems like the goal. We'll talk about hate speech or free speech on a freeway overpass with two groups, Antifa and Patriot Prayer. Patriot Prayer running signs that said it's okay to be white. Is that hate speech or is that just free speech in America? And we'll talk to a real estate agent who says that one of his biggest jobs lately has been arranging to rent people's backyards where people here in the Northwest can live in tents because they cannot afford to live in an apartment or a house. We'll get to all of that and your phone calls and emails. Our Twitter poll today, should every Northwest city welcome rideshare services like Uber and Lyft? There are some late arrivals to that game, and we'll talk about Eugene and Medford. I would say yes. The rideshare services, I think, are part of the future of transportation, and unfortunately, there are too many cities that have decided to take the side of cab companies and try to lock out those services, something that only hurts citizens and it hurts the business community as well. Our Twitter poll is found at Lars Larson Show on Twitter and LarsLarson.com on the web. It's brought to you by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks. Rock, gravel, sand, and topsoil. Let the Dan Jones trucks put it where you want it and save your aching back. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, you're always welcome. And of course, naysayers go to the head of the line. At least on my program, they do. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
We may never know if Alabama Senate candidate Judge Roy Moore committed sexual crimes against teenage girls 40 years ago. Five women have now accused Moore of everything from inappropriate sexual interest in teenage girls to sexual molestation and even assault. It may be true that he did those things. I don't know, and I don't know of a way that anybody can know that before voters cast their ballots in less than a month. Now, Democrats and a number of Republicans have demanded that Moore step out of the race for the Senate that he seemed likely to win just last week. I think that Moore's candidacy is now incredibly problematic, as so many people have decided already that he's guilty based on an accusation only launched by a newspaper a week ago. Even if the voters of Alabama choose him in a month, the Senate may take the extraordinary step of actually expelling him. Strangely ironic is that Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey is right now, as I speak, on trial for corruption, and none of his fellow Democrats will even say that he should be out if he's convicted. Can you imagine that? And the trial jury is a good indication of why America is in a certain amount of trouble. During their deliberations this week, the jury of Bob Menendez asked some questions. And their very first question of the judge in that case, can you define what a senator is? America, we're in big trouble. And now the grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Arm Yourself Gun Store in Hillsboro. Proudly veteran owned and open 7 days a week. ArmYourselfStore.com.
So, a man was in jail here in the Northwest. He was in jail in part because his mental illness made him somebody who had to be put into custody, and there were no beds in the mental hospitals. He had bipolar disorder. He refused to eat, he refused to drink, and he refused to take his medication because he was having a severe episode of one kind or another. Bradley Thomas had bipolar disorder, and he died in his cell 2 years ago because he refused to eat, drink, or take his medication. Now his family has won a lawsuit for almost $3 million. It makes the lawyers richer. It means the family wins the lawsuit lottery. But do you really think that a family should get $3 million because a mentally ill family member refused to eat or drink or take his meds while in custody? I don't think so, but I wasn't on the jury. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Barry Gregg writes, and Lars, my wife and I are from Washington State. We went to Portland over the Veterans Day weekend. Our first visit in 5 or 6 years. Still good food, but the city is a dump. Homeless people everywhere, garbage on the streets. The regular folks on the street were unfriendly. Nobody was smiling. I had a dog try to attack me, and the owner was mad at me. Not welcoming, not friendly, and worst of all, didn't feel safe. Probably our last trip to the Rose City until things change. Is this what a socialist utopia is supposed to look like? Signed, Barry Gregg. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com.
This is the War on the Car.
You might want to buckle up.
On the Lars Larson Show.
Well, you would think it's the War on the Car, where the Oregon legislature very quietly, almost stealthy-like, decided to pass what they call a privilege tax. You get the privilege if you buy a brand new car, and you have to pay a tax of 0.5% on the sale value of the car. So if you're buying a, say, $50,000 automobile, you're going to be paying 1% of $50,000. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of dollars out of the pockets of people who simply want to buy an automobile. Well, a used car dealership and two road user industry groups are now asking the Oregon Supreme Court to overturn the tax. Oregon AAA, the subsidiary of AAA, AutoSource, and the Oregon Trucking Association have filed a petition saying that the plan violates the Oregon Constitution, which puts strict limits on the expenditure of road-related tax revenues. The state fund that is used to pay for the roads is separate from the fund that pays for other state services. Voters approved an amendment to the Constitution in 1980 that requires proceeds from vehicle taxes to go to the road fund and pay only for highway-related expenses. But the tax that is set to take effect on January 1, dubbed the privilege tax, because they say it's a tax on dealers for the privilege of selling cars, won't work that way. Privilege tax revenues will go into a separate account to subsidize the purchase of electric cars. Legislative staffers figure the tax is going to raise $60 million a year. Sounds to me like it violates the Constitution, and I hope that AAA and its buddies win when they go before the Supreme Court to show that it violates the state's Constitution. Let me go to your calls now at 866. Hey, Lars, let's go first to Douglas in Sun River. Hey, Douglas, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, hi, Lars. Hey, I was watching the Jeff Sessions grilling this morning, and one of the Democratic senators was grilling Jeff Sessions about his statement in the past that people who smoke marijuana were not good people. Mm-hmm. Then he started to name off Arnold Schwarzenegger, Obama, the other presidents, all these other people, as if they, how could he dare call them not good people? Well, those people that were smoking pot were breaking the law. It was illegal. It was not legalized at the time. And my statement from the past used to be, who has to die so you can get high? All those people contributed to drug lords and all the horrible things that we've had to deal with because of illegal drugs.
That's right. And by the way, Obama, who was a major league pot smoker in high school, he was proud of it. He was called himself president of the Chum Gang. His Department of Justice, well, they did. Punahou High was a very high place for Barack Obama. His Department of Justice wrote a thing called the Cole Memo. And so the Cole memo says, in non-lawyer terms, you can legalize it at the state level and the federal government will leave you alone as long as you're not exporting it elsewhere. The problem is that both Oregon and Washington have become major league exporters of illegal pot outside their boundaries. The state police in Oregon figure $1 billion worth of illegal pot is leaving the state of Oregon each and every year. And so they're violating the Cole memo. Now, remember, the Cole memo is not a George W. Bush thing. It's not a Donald Trump thing. It's not a Jeff Sessions thing. It is a Barack Obama, Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch thing. It was a deal they cut with the federal government where the federal government said, we'll leave you alone as long if you want to legalize pot, as long as you keep it in your state. Well, the state of Oregon, state of Washington are violating that agreement. And I'm kind of hoping that Sessions comes down on them like a ton of bricks.
Well, I think Jeff Sessions was totally right in his statement. And that senator that tried to demean him for that statement really doesn't understand anything. I don't even know why people would vote for people like that.
That's a very good point, and I appreciate your call. Let's go to Mark and Eugene. Mark, thanks for listening on KPNW. What's on your mind?
Yeah, listen, I've been reading several articles, and I see one on here, and I quote, it reads that the woman, that 14-year-old, has admitted to being paid by the WAPO by a woman named Beth thousands of dollars to discredit or shall accuse Roy Moore. Why is nobody exploring these news articles?
There is a, by the way, the news article you're talking about, the allegation that reporters paid bribes to get people to tell the story. I've been looking for some kind of substantiation that would say that that's true. I haven't been able to find it. When I do, I will say that. But, you know, unfortunately, Mark, when you read the internet, please do me this favor. Don't assume everything you read on the internet is true. And there's
why I'm calling you, because I wanted to verify this. This one is coming from Viral Patriots. I don't know if you're familiar with that website.
Not that one in particular, but I want to tell you something. There's an awful lot of junk on the internet, and an awful lot of it is just the purest BS, because people put that stuff up there because they know that if they can generate a lot of clicks, it's worth money. And that's really what it comes down to, is if you can write a spicy enough headline and get a lot of people to click on it, then it's worth cash. And so they will write stuff that isn't true. I don't have any reason to believe that the reporters from the Washington Post, who I don't trust either, paid anybody a bribe. I have no reason to believe that. If I ever find some proof of that, I'll be glad to shout it from the rooftops. But well, at this point, I don't find it. Oh, sorry about that. Go ahead, Mark.
What did you receive the money? Are you there?
Say it quick.
Okay, that she received the money because she's been divorced 3 times and is filing for bankruptcy.
Yeah, well, that may or may not be true. I don't know any reason to believe it is. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and emails. You know, this story about the two cops in Shelton, Washington really troubles me. Now, they are no longer cops. They have been fired from their jobs, or at least let go. They parted company, et cetera. But there has now been a decision made that the Mason County prosecutor is not going to pursue charges against Justin Doherty and Matt Dickinson. There was an investigation because the two police officers struck, pepper sprayed, and used a stun gun on 25-year-old Nicholas Heflin. They broke bones, they caused other injuries, and they, in fact, were found by an investigation by their own department to have unreasonably beaten the man. Now, you know that I want us to take a hard line on the homeless, on street people who bring any number of problems to all the cities of the Northwest. However, you have to do it legally. But now the local district or local prosecutor has said the burden of proof cannot be met to sustain criminal assault charges beyond reasonable doubt in court. The attorney for the man who was beaten, Nicholas Heflin, says that her client plans to file a lawsuit against the city. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. But it is a concern to me when people who are operating as law enforcement officers might go out and literally just beat somebody badly rather than simply take them into custody. And it sounds like in this case, the appropriate action has been taken by their department. They are no longer with the department. Let me go to Mike in Everett, who's listening on KVI, Talk Radio 570. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just heard a story from, I can't even remember where I heard it from, is on another radio show, maybe the TV, that they said Washington State needs to take a closer look at electing so many white people, getting a more minority vote, because the reason was, look at the last mayor of Seattle, Ed Murray, and look what he did. And I freaked out when I heard that, honestly, because they're talking about electing a more diverse group, and the only reason Ed Murray was elected in the first place was because he was a diverse candidate, and they wanted a little, I mean, I support gay people, I have no problem with that, but that shouldn't be the reason you elect someone.
Nope.
Just based off of that only.
And, no, nor skin color, nor gender, nor any of those things. Color,
yeah. And they did, and then that's what happened. And now they're saying, well, it's because he was white, and we need to go with a more diverse group like this. And you're just going to get the same problems if you don't elect someone based off of merit and only off of skin color. And that's all I have to say.
I'm with you, Mike. And in fact, you know the kind of diversity that they never talk about that I'd like to see them do more of? Diversity of thought. Because even though Seattle is probably a 60-65% liberal population, it still means 35% or 40% of the people are conservatives. So how about a city government that reflects the population? Now, when you mention that, liberals think you're saying based on race or based on gender or based on religion. But what I'm talking about is diversity of thought, you know, where you have some conservatives on the city council, you have some liberals on the city council, and if it's more heavily weighted toward liberals, I understand that because Seattle is a liberal city. But can you name a single conservative in Seattle city government or King County government?
I wish. No, yeah, I live here, so I know I can't.
No, you can't. Mike, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let's go to Ryan in Tigard. Hey, Ryan, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, longtime listener. Love your show.
Thank you.
I actually was just hoping to get a little more information about the possible tolls that were going to be discussed in Washington getting placed on the I-5 interstate.
Well, first of all, they'll be placed not in Washington, but by Oregon, because it's to benefit Oregon, which is one of the reasons we shouldn't be doing it, because we're not doing it as a bipartisan or bi-state deal. We're having one state say we are going to rip dollars out of the pockets of people who don't live in our state to pay for something we want, even though that state does not want to participate. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the whole thing is ridiculous. I mean, we're already paying, you know, taxes on our roads. We don't need to be taxed twice.
I would agree with you. And the other thing is, remember what their motivation is. They're saying that this isn't necessarily just about getting money, although it would peel tens of millions of dollars out of the pockets of people who don't live in Oregon, and then it would go for Oregon-related projects. But what they say they want to do is they want to control congestion. Well, the way they're talking about controlling congestion is if we make it expensive enough, a lot of people will not be able to drive on the road or at certain times of the day. So their idea is
to
literally price people out. You know, if you did the same thing with restaurants, if you said restaurants are getting too crowded, well, let's just have all the restaurants raise their prices, and then only the affluent people will be able to go out to restaurants between, let's say, 5 and 7 o'clock at night, if that's when the crowding is happening. Now, private companies wouldn't be that stupid, but government is that stupid. They want to say to the young lady who's a secretary or the young man who's working at his first job and he's not making that much money, if you choose to drive in during the tough times, you know, the congested times of the day, we're going to hit you with a big tax, in effect, a toll, and we're going to try to keep you off the road. You'll either be forced to drive in earlier or drive in later or quit your job or whatever, but they want to keep you off the road that you have helped pay for.
Yeah, and I actually do sales, so I'm on that freeway going back and forth almost 5 to 6 times a day.
Well, you're really going to get whacked, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Not too thrilled about it if it goes through.
Well, imagine the person who's in a service industry like you. You're having to go see clients. What if you're a plumber? What if you're an electrician? What if you have to go back and forth across those bridges? And they're going to hurt people to do this because for some, and you know, it's coming out of what is supposed to be a very progressive government. you know, just like Seattle is supposed to be a progressive government and Eugene is and so is Spokane, that they're, that these are progressives who say, let's tax the bejesus out of people so that only the rich will be able to drive on the road during rush hour. Well, what about the poor person? Well, they'll just have to take the bus and they'll have to leave, you know, 45 minutes to an hour earlier. They'll have to get home 45 minutes to an hour later. And that's a problem. So, Ryan, I'm with you. I'm against this stuff. But at this point, the Oregon legislature's already voted on it. Now, whether they're actually going to push it through, who knows? Let's go to RJ in Tacoma. Hey, RJ, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Oh, good afternoon, Lars. I just wanted to correct a little bit of a record before we start talking about the Moore situation again.
All right.
Yeah, I listened to a lot of it yesterday, and what people, a lot of people are kind of making a misconception here about roasting the Republican Party. Back when these allegations occurred, Mr. Moore was not a Republican. Mr. Moore was a Democrat. So are we roasting the Mr. Moore as a Republican, or are we roasting him when he was a Democrat?
I don't. Well, first of all, I can see why it doesn't really matter because the charges are today and the allegations are today. But I wasn't aware that Roy Moore was ever a Democrat. In fact, the only time I've ever met the man in person, I was called upon to MC an event here in the Northwest, and he was a speaker, and I introduced him. And he was not, he was certainly not a Democrat then. And I think, where did you get that information that he was one time a Democrat?
I don't want to put it over the air here because I know you're not for.
Okay, I'll tell you what, I will look it up, but I believe that you are incorrect at this point, RJ.
I'm actually not. I got a good source, and you'll find that in the 80s, in the early 80s, he was a Democrat.
Okay, so, but here's the problem. We're not roasting him for then. We're roasting him for now. But the allegation is, if he did those things then that were so offensive to people, is he then a good representative of the people of Alabama or somebody who should be a member of the Senate today? And I hope you can understand that that would apply whether the event happened a long time ago when he was a Democrat or when he was something else. Even if he had lived in another state, it wouldn't matter. The question is his background sufficiently distasteful that, you know, for instance, if, you know, if you had somebody, this is kind of an old example, but there every once in a while for the last 30 or 40 years, we'll find somebody who is at one time a one of Hitler's prison camp guards. And we'd say, well, he did that a long time ago. Yeah, except having that in your background suggests something about who you are today. So if Roy Moore in his 30s was attracted to teenage girls, and if that was the case, and that he was out actually trying to pressure teenage girls into sexual favors, whether he was a Democrat then or now really doesn't matter. What matters is, what does it say about him as a person? And what do you think it says about him?
I said
at the beginning of this hour that there is no way for any of us to know whether these charges are true. But just for the sake of argument, RJ, let's say it is true that in his 30s, Roy Moore tried to pressure underage girls into obtaining sexual favors from them when they were underage and he was in his 30s. What does that say about him today to you?
No, I'm with you. I'm not defending him in any way. I'm just tired of people taking it out on the Republican Party when they had nothing to do with it, A. And B, as far as I know, you know, yeah, you got evidence out there that these women are saying this. But then again, we haven't had a trial. And at the same time, people change their minds over time.
Well, there
maybe
isn't going to be a trial either.
Dating.
There isn't ever going to be a trial.
Maybe.
You know that.
Yeah, I understand that. But we're going to have a trial by the public, and you know that's coming. And I'm just making sure that the right people are on the right sides of the aisle. I don't see any Democrats, none of them, not the ones that were allegedly dragging dollar bills to Trailer Park, none of the people that were involved in any of the sexual allegations from the Democrat Party, where are their resignations?
Well, we're not going to see them, and you know that. Back in just a moment, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. And as the caller said, Politico ran a story yesterday, and Roy Moore's Wikipedia page also says that he was a Democrat until 1992. 92 was apparently the year, according to Politico, that the state of Alabama finally elected a Republican as governor. So it doesn't matter. And I'm not even sure why anybody would use the argument that if he was a Democrat at the time when he first began to show an interest, an unhealthy interest in teenage girls, that somehow that changes the equation today. The question isn't what was he. The question is, what is he? And I get that. The thing I start with is there's no way to know whether today he is a pedophile or whether he was a pedophile 40 years ago. And nobody is offering up an answer of what was he in between? You know, was he somebody who had an unhealthy interest 40 years ago in teenage girls and then stopped all of that activity for the better part of 35 years? Or is he somebody who still has an unhealthy interest in teenage girls? And if so, where are the young ladies who you would expect to be coming forward today in the same kind of avalanche that we saw after Harvey Weinstein was accused in Hollywood and there was an avalanche of people saying, well, there are problems here. Where are those people today? Or did Roy Moore simply engage in an unhealthy interest in teenage girls 38 years ago and then stop for 35 years? Whether he was a Democrat then or a Republican now doesn't really matter. What matters is what is he today, and does the state of Alabama want him to represent them in the U.S. Senate? Let's go to Dan in Coos Bay. Hey, Dan, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon. What's on your mind?
Well, and I don't really want to try and I want to be careful how I say it because I don't want to pass judgment myself on what Judge Moore may or may not have done back then, but I think I understood from some other sources, and I've been trying to confirm them, that the age of consent in the time frame he's being accused of these acts was much younger.
And it does. And does that matter? Let me ask you. I'm going to do this Socratic. Does this matter? Whether the age of does it? Why?
Yeah. Well, because at the time it was considered acceptable, and then as society we looked at it and said,
actually, I don't know about you, Dan. I'm 58. How old are you?
I'm 51.
Have you ever heard? Have you ever heard the phrase 15 will get you 20?
Yes, I have.
What does that mean? And was it a phrase you heard when you were 15 years old, or thereabouts?
No,
it was not. Wow, I'm surprised.
No. Sheltered upbringing.
Okay, but you get my point. How far back do you have to go before somebody says it's okay for a 32-year-old guy to be dating 17-year-old girls? Because it wasn't the 70s, because I went to high school. I graduated in 1977. And believe me, nobody thought it was okay for 30-something-year-old guys to be dating 17-year-old girls, even though it was the 70s and seems like a million years ago now.
We've always thought it seemed creepy, but creepy and
yeah. But
legal,
see, you want to go to legal. Legal doesn't matter. Do you understand why legal doesn't matter in this case? Because creepy is what matters. Do you want somebody who's creepy representing your state in the United States Senate or in the Alabama legislature or in the Oregon legislature or the Washington legislature? Do you?
It's not my choice.
No, but you're weighing in on something that involves the choice that's going to be made in a month by the people of Alabama. Will they choose Roy Moore to represent them, and should he drop out because he's unacceptable as a U.S. Senate candidate?
But see, I feel that what we're doing right now is in the court of public opinion, we're condemning him.
And that's okay. The court of public opinion is allowed to condemn things. Absolutely. Every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live.
Thunder.
Red Meat Radio.
Should be played at high volume.
This is the Lars Larson Show, broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
When enough people make false promises, words stop meaning anything.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
Your voice is beautiful. I've heard it for a long time.
You are enjoying the miracle of radio.
Now, here's Lars Larson.
Let's just swipe left on Lars Larson. Some dignity back in the White House.
On FM News 101.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live throughout the Pacific Northwest on the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to take your calls. I wanted to tell you about this. Couple of little items that I thought you might find interesting. Number one, a clash yesterday between the group Patriot Prayer, and I like Patriot Prayer. I think they're a decent group. I don't agree with them on everything, but I agree with them on most things. And then, of course, Antifa, the so-called anti-fascists who use fascist tactics to try to enforce their belief in opposing fascism. So if you can figure that out, if it's a double standard, we understand that liberals need double standards so they can have any standards at all. Well, apparently both groups showed up on an I-5 overpass in Vancouver, Washington, because the Patriot Prayer group was running what they said was a controversial slogan on a sign where it said, "It's okay to be white." Yes, that's what passes for controversy today. You know, you can have Black Lives Matter up there and all the liberals will applaud, but if you just say it's okay to be white, that's going to be a problem. The clash began as Antifa members held a sign over the overpass to remember Mulugeta Sarah, who was a PSU student. I covered his trial back in the day, who was killed by three white supremacists 29 years ago. Members of Patriot Prayer went to the next overpass to display their "It's okay to white be white" sign. Clashes began and both sides argued whether white privilege was real. The confrontation lasted about an hour, but overall remained peaceful. Second item, and I thought you might find this interesting, because there's a brand new police chief in the region who's the chief of police for Portland, Danielle Outlaw. I've always liked the idea that there would be a chief outlaw, but the chief outlaw. And I just got word back from her press guy, Chris Burley, who's a police officer, a sergeant, that she is not available to comment on this. But her former boss, who is still the police chief of Oakland, California, is Ann Kirkpatrick. Well, she's got problems right now, and here's why. In the city of Oakland, California, which has declared itself a sanctuary city, the Immigrations and Customs Enforcement folks from the federal government wanted to go after, legally go after, a bunch of people who were engaging in human sexual trafficking of underage children. Now, does it get much worse than that? Underage children being trafficked for sexual purposes. So when ICE and Homeland Security said to Oakland, to the police department, "Can we please get some help with this? Because we're going to go out and go after some people who are trafficking in children." The chief of police, Ann Kirkpatrick, said, "Yeah, we can help you out with that." Well, now Oakland's police chief is facing a complaint from one of the city commissioners and questions from the city council over her department's assistance to the immigration-related operation by federal agents. At issue is whether she made false statements and whether the department's involvement violated Oakland's sanctuary city ordinance. Because after all, we all know that if you're a sanctuary city, that comes first. Should you let something like trying to stop people who traffic in children for sexual purposes get in the way of sanctuary city? Apparently, at least in Oakland, the answer to that is no. You don't let anything get in the way of your sanctuary city. Federal agents said that all they wanted the cops to do in Oakland was provide traffic enforcement while they were involved in a human trafficking investigation at the home of a Guatemalan family. They arrested or detained two brothers. Records indicated that deportation proceedings began against one of the brothers, but no criminal charges had been filed. And so now there's an investigation going on. In a written response to the council members, Kirkpatrick defended her actions, saying that traffic enforcement was needed in part to reduce the risk of friendly fire in which confused city police officers might shoot at armed plainclothes federal agents. Kirkpatrick reiterated that she ordered the officers not to participate in the operation itself. Even though, imagine this, you want to tell your cops, yes, you can go down and help with traffic to make sure that nobody accidentally shoots somebody else. But for goodness sake, can you imagine a police chief telling her officers, don't get involved in trying to help stop the human traffickers who are trafficking in the sexual exploitation of children? The police department initially said on August 16th that federal agents were investigating the sex trafficking of juveniles. They later amended that to just be human trafficking. So whether it was juveniles or adults, whether it was sexual trafficking or just selling human beings and buying human beings, you would think that a police chief and a police department and the city council would be proud to say, yes, we were part of the effort to stop that human trafficking. But apparently not if it involves enforcement of America's immigration laws. Let's go to Aaron, who's calling in. Hey, Aaron, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. I take it you're calling in about the lawsuit that the family filed after the family member died. One of their family members died. He was ill. He had some mental illness, and he stopped eating, and he stopped drinking water, and he died. What's your point on? What's your take on that?
Hey, Lars. Yeah. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. How are you?
Good to hear. Yeah, pretty good. I was just calling. I'm going to let you know, honestly, I am a little biased on this one.
Okay.
I do have family members with mental illnesses varying from bipolar, schizophrenic, all across the board there. And my thing is, if there was not enough beds in an institute for him, and you said he had to go to a jail, is that correct?
Yeah, they had him in a jail cell because they didn't have any other place to put him. And it doesn't make clear whether he was arrested because he was a danger to others or whether he had presented a danger to himself. And it could have been either one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the way I see it is, regardless of where they ended up keeping him, whoever was in charge of holding him, they should be capable of dealing with those types of episodes or being in contact with people that can. So for me personally,
I guess I'm confused. If you have somebody in custody who's bipolar, and that's Bradley Thomas who's bipolar, and he has an episode, he's depressed, and he says, I'm not going to eat, and I'm not going to drink, and I'm not taking my meds, what's the solution?
Unfortunately, most of the time it comes down to forcing them, as far as my experience, because I've seen that happen from people I know and people I'm related to, where they get into these episodes, and they don't eat, they don't drink, and they don't take their medicine.
Yeah.
And that's because of their mental illness, obviously.
Right.
Not
right.
The same person is going to be doing that. And from my experience, most of the time it comes down to them having to be forced to be fed and take their medicine.
Can you force them to take their medicine or to be fed and to drink water and to be fed food?
If they are admitted into an institute and they go through the proper paperwork, yes.
Yeah. Well,
so I'm just personally, I feel that that family should have been awarded that. Granted,
well, but I guess what I'm wondering then, Aaron, let's go to the lawsuit then, since now we've dealt with the can you force them? I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, and I know there are probably civil rights people who'd say, well, you don't have any right to force somebody to eat or drink. But if it's going to mean their life, then maybe that's something else. But tell me how it fixes the situation to hand the family, after legal fees, a couple of million bucks. How does that fix anything?
Honestly, I don't feel that fixes anything. I mean, you can't put a price on, you know, someone's life, especially a
No, but
one.
But why should his family be enriched? And I'm sure their argument was, you have denied us the company of this person. That's usually what is loss of companionship. But do you want to bet me that this family probably wasn't too crazy to have Bradley Thomas at home most of the time either?
I can't speculate on that.
Well, hold on. If he's so out of control that he ends up in custody for either breaking laws, presenting a danger to others, or a danger to himself, what kind of house guest do you think he'd be?
If it was something as minor as, you know, presenting harm to himself, and that could be something as simple as, you know, him not eating or drinking.
Yeah.
Then I can understand that. If it's, you know, him being potentially harmful to others, and that's why he's in custody. I mean, without us knowing why he was in custody, it's kind of hard to really speculate on much of it.
Yeah. Hmm. But again, if the point of lawsuits is that you should be able to, you know, the point of lawsuits is to correct behavior, isn't it? In most cases?
Correct.
That you have punitive damages. Punitive is punishing. So if the idea is somebody does you wrong, you can sue them and the judge or the jury can give you punitive damages to punish them for whatever it was that they did so that they'll stop doing it. But giving them $2.85 million, I don't see how that fixes anything.
No, and that would come back on, I mean, for whatever reason, they won the lawsuit. So something must have been mishandled at some point, causing, you know, the eventual death of this individual. So really, that would go back on whatever institute was in charge.
Well, he was booked. I just found this. He was booked March 23rd, 2015. For menacing and harassment, and that he exhibited behaviors consistent with mental illness. They then showed that his illness was so severe, he placed his food in the toilet, was seen naked in his cell, scooping stuff out of the toilet and wiping it around on parts of the cell. So he began to review service, and a day before he died, a judge ordered him committed to the state hospital. But unfortunately, you know, that was, and then the next day he was dead. And that's what happened. So I'm not sure who could have done something better. Sounds like, you know, if you've got somebody who's locked up because he's harassing people and threatening people, you got to protect the community from him. And how do you protect him from himself?
Yeah, I feel something that should have been handled by a institute of some sort that is capable and trained to handle those types of...
Well, can I point something out to you? Do you mind saying who you voted for governor in the last election and who you plan to vote for governor in the next election? Oh, you're in Vancouver, so who'd you vote for?
I would not like to disclose that.
Okay. So you probably voted for the Democrat. Okay. Do you know what the Democrat governor of Oregon wanted to do to save money? There's a brand new psychiatric hospital north of Eugene in Junction City. It cost $135 million. And she wanted to save money by taking this brand new hospital, mental hospital, and shutting it down. And then you wonder why we don't have enough beds to take care of people who are mental cases.
Yeah.
And it's all a result of who you vote for to be in charge. And you recall that the mental hospital in Washington State, which was being run by the Inslee administration, also had a problem because it was inappropriately caring for people. And he was also letting literally thousands of people go early from prison. And again, that's a consequence of who you vote for. So just remember, if you want people to be properly cared for, you got to put people in charge who are capable of being in charge. And unfortunately, too many voters are voting for people like Kate Brown and Jay Inslee, who, you know, couldn't pour Kool-Aid out of a boot if the instructions were on the heel. Back in just a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the program. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and emails. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. We'll get to your phone calls and emails. We got a guest coming up here pretty shortly. Juan is on the line in North Korea. Juan, welcome to the program. Thanks very much.
How you doing, Mr. Larson?
Doing well, Juan. What's on your mind today?
Okay, I'm a frustrated and concerned citizen. And coming from Cuba, I know what the communists look like. And the most critical problem that we have is the situation with North Korea. And
it's one of the most dangerous, for sure, yeah.
I sent a certified letter to Jim Mattis, the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense. Excuse me. And I don't have no answer. I sent multiple emails to the White House, I sent even an email to the producer of your show.
Yeah.
Because I'm a regular.
What is it you'd like to know? What is it you'd like to know, Juan?
No, what I want to share is the ideas that I have. But I need to share this idea with somebody that have the access to the people on the high level of the government, because I'm a little guy. I'm a regular citizen.
So am I. But tell us what the idea is. You're keeping us all in suspense, Juan.
Sir, I can discuss this matter on the radio or on email.
Well, why are you calling?
Because I like to have a meeting with you, sir.
Well, why can't we just talk about it right here in front of everybody else who's listening to the show? We'd like to share the idea with them.
Because my ideas is nothing to lose. I got some idea because when I see on TV this military expert talking about North Korea, that this could be a nuclear. If something happened, it could be nuclear.
Yes, it could.
And the ideas that I have, it could be on the conventional way.
I get that, but why not just say what they are? Why do you want to hold them back and not share them?
I can say that on the airway.
Why not? Okay, I'll tell you what. We're going to put you on hold, and if you want to come down and spend 30 seconds bending my ear, I'll be glad to talk to you. But, any idea you can't just share on the air, I don't understand why. Or why you would send emails, certified letters, call the show, and then say, but I can't share the idea with you unless I see you face-to-face. I don't get that. Let's go to Perry in Forest Grove. Hey, Perry, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, Lars, how's it going?
It's going very well. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to pose a question to everybody out there. You and I are about the same age.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much you remember of cars 20, 30, 40 years ago. But we didn't have such things as power locks back then.
Stop for a second, because I know where you're headed with this, but I want the rest of the audience to catch up to us. You're talking about the young lady who came out as an accuser yesterday, saying that Roy Moore, when she was a teenage girl and he was in his 30s, that he offered her a ride home, that she got in his car, and that while she was in his car, he drove her home, and that he reached over and locked the door. She did not say he used power locks, but that he locked the door and that she couldn't get out of the car, and that she felt he was assaulting her, and that he was, in fact, trying to sexually assault her. She came forward with this accusation from almost 40 years ago yesterday. And you're going to tell me, I think, because a lot of people have already headed this direction, that because there weren't electric power locks in cars at the time, that she couldn't have been referring to that, except... Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We'll get back to your phone calls and emails here in just a moment. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls on the Radio Northwest Network. And Fred Stewart is a longtime friend of the program. He's been a man who's worked in private industry. He's in real estate. He's been involved in politics. He's run for office before. So he's done all the things that you would expect from somebody who's a good citizen to do. Fred, welcome back to the program. And you sent me a note because you were talking about how, as a real estate broker, you're actually in a little bit of a different business these days, trying to negotiate tent space in backyards.
Yes. We've got people now who are seeking tent space. Now, I got to be honest, I try not to let people do that. But I've actually seen ads on Craigslist for it, and I've actually had people approach me and say, hey, Fred, I can't afford a room. I'm in a bind. All I can afford is anywhere between $100 to $600 a month for some space. They look at it as temporary, trying to get back up on their feet. They got jobs. They're just in a crunch. Things happen. Sickness happens. Divorce happens. Car accidents happen. And they're trying to find a place to live. But what makes me laugh about this is when you got people who are down on their luck and they're earnestly trying to get, pull themselves off their feet, there's, a bidding war between those folks for somebody's backyard so they can pitch a tent. And that makes me laugh because I think of the whole thing about why people think rent control is our solution. I tell people, anybody who thinks rent control is any solution to our crisis right now,
they just not understanding how bad this crisis is. Because the real problem is poor housing policy from our city council, which limits how fast our developers are able to bring more housing to market. It's just ridiculous.
I couldn't agree with you more, Fred, because you know this show now talks to the whole Northwest. I mean, we're in Spokane and Eugene and Medford and all these different places, Seattle as well, Bellingham. And most of these places have the same kind of crazy rules to one extent or another. Seattle's about as bad as Portland when it comes to the rules that you have to follow to build housing. And they run around and write all these crazy rules, and they make it hideously expensive to build housing. And then they turn around and wonder out loud, why do you think we're short of housing? And I'm like, well, I could tell you. You've gone around and made it very, very expensive to build housing. And then you promise to tie the hands of the landlords if you can and say, now that we've made it very expensive to build the housing, we're going to make it really tough for you to be able to get the rent that will pay back the cost of the expensive housing. Well, when you design a system like that, are you that surprised when people say, well, to heck with it then. I'm going to the Tri-Cities or I'm going to someplace outside of the crazy political environments where you make it really expensive to build something and impossible to get the money back for building it, and then you wonder why you don't have any of it.
And they also wonder why there's no developers in Portland for the very reasons you just explained, and you're spot on, 100%. They're wondering why these developers can't find a way to afford to build rental housing, you know, affordable rental housing. I mean, I'm building my first home out in North Portland right now.
Yeah.
And it's cracking me up because I'm trying to sell this home under $400,000. But when I'm looking at spending $50,000 to $65,000 with my city on an unimproved street, by the way, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I'm going to spend $50,000 to $60,000 with my city just on permits, and that's before I put the first shovel in the ground. I've heard of developers out there spending as much as $100,000 with our city before they put the first shovel in the ground. And then the same people who run our city say, oh, by the way, developers, we need you to build affordable housing, but please give me my $100,000 first.
It doesn't make any sense. And yet when you talk to people and you say, gosh, if you change these policies, all they do, I mean, even somebody like Ted Wheeler says, well, we'll make it easier for you to get through the process. So we'll make it easier for you to fill out the paperwork necessary for you to pay us $100,000. Well, great. Thank you. Thank you so much that it now only took me 4 hours to fill out the paperwork to give you $100,000 instead of 8 hours worth of my time to give you $100,000. That isn't addressing the problem, is it?
No, it's not. And then they go out in public and they tell everybody it's the developer's fault, and they won't accept that we've had at least 15 years of poor housing policy in this city that has not addressed the growing demand from the ever-increasing population in this market. You know, most cities in the past would have looked at this as an opportunity and would have jumped for joy. If Mr. Lovejoy and Mr. Pettigrew was alive today, they'd be pulling their hairs out because they'd say, God, you've got the world moving here. This is an opportunity for growth. Jump on board. But instead, our city council, they're totally against it. And they do everything they can, you know, to just get in the way of building more housing. Just ever more evidence of their war on poverty in this town. I know they call themselves progressive. I know they say they're liberals. But anybody on city council right now that feels that they're doing the poor and the people who are in disabilities, the people on fixed income, any justice by going to work every day, they are absolutely crazy.
By the way, Fred, when you talk about negotiating, as you were a moment ago, for somebody who wants to pay or is willing to pay $100 to $600 bucks a month just to pitch a tent in somebody's backyard, you're not talking about tent space plus maybe access to a shower and a toilet. You're just talking about tent space, right?
Yeah, some people will say, I would love to have an extension cord and access to at least a toilet. Some people will say that. Some people will say, well, if that would be nice, but if you won't let me have that, as long as you let me have the space. You see, this is what gets me. A lot of these people have jobs. They are just not able to right now get that extra step out. They're working as hard as they can. They're not trying to live out on the public dole. They're trying to find a way to find a solution for their problem. you know, when I should have a city, I should have a city council working with developers to build, you know, just a modest, good, cheap housing like we used to have with the YMCA, where somebody down on their luck could go in and rent a cot, rent a bed, you know, just have a decent place to sleep, clean up, and go to work the next day. No, instead of doing that, these guys are making it so darn hard to build anything. I'm amazed we got any developers building in this town. Totally amazed. I think half of them are just crazy.
Well, Justice, I keep bringing up Rob Justice, who, again, I have no financial connection to. I think I've met him in person one time, but he's a nice guy. And he goes out and he builds housing and he brings it in at really affordable prices. That is, he's building apartments where his studio apartments rent for $450 a month, maybe $500. His one bedrooms are like $600 and two bedrooms are like $750. I mean, you know, Fred, that if you do the backwards math, if you've got a young couple where they're both making minimum wage, so they're making, you know, basically $20,000 a year each, so $40,000 gross, and after taxes, they're going to take home $3,000 a month. That if they could pay $700 or $800 for rent, that's an affordable number for somebody at that kind of household income. And if you're a single individual, $400 or $500 a month, you know, it's going to strain your budget a little bit, but you should be able to make it on that. And yet he isn't getting any room from the city at all. The city just talks about passing housing bonds and, you know, this latest $250 million housing bond so that they can go out and build really, really expensive housing. When the city gets involved in subsidized housing, they typically spend three times as much as Rob Justice does building the same kind of apartment units in the same kind of neighborhood. And
three times as much?
Yeah.
You're being kind. I'd say more like 10 times as much.
Well,
You're being too nice. I've never seen anything come close to three times as much.
Well, he says he brings his units in at about $75,000 to $90,000 a unit, and the city comes in at $200,000 to $300,000 a unit. And you wonder, doesn't anybody ask this question? Why does it cost three times as much or four times as much for the city to build a subsidized unit as it does for a guy like Rob Justice to build it in the private sector on his own?
Lars, I guarantee you, I bet my career on it, before the first shovel goes in on a city-done project, they spent three times that much already just getting organized. You understand what I'm talking about? Their admin cost for building real estate in this town is insane. If I just took the admin cost and gave it to any of the top 20 developers in this town, I bet they each could build four times more units than what the city gets done.
Right.
And that's just off the admin cost.
I don't doubt it.
It's not that efficient.
Fred, before I let you go, anything else to say about these people who are out trying to rent somebody's backyard?
All I want to say is, friends, you should go out and check out what's going on in Craigslist where people are looking for roommates. There's a lot of people who are looking for a room to rent in this town. They're offering anywhere between $200 to $800 a month, depending on the area, for a place to live. And you're going to see some of these people who are willing to live in your backyard. And if the way you can help them, you know, I mean, having a roommate is a personal thing. You gotta have a connection. It's more than just financial. But I would say if you've got the space, if there's something you can do to help some of these people, you know, please do. Because a lot of these people are just hardworking people who are trying to find a way to, you know, to get where you're at, to get off the street.
Well, if you could trust the people. And look, you know, Fred, the very first house I ever owned when I was 21, I knew going into it that I couldn't do it unless I had two roommates. And having two roommates is not, you know, it's not most people's choice to say, well, gee, I want to have other people living in the house because you know that it comes with compromises. It comes with compromises on noise, on all kinds of things. And you want to find roommates that you can get along with reasonably well. But I wish people luck because it sounds like it's a pretty tough situation out there right now. Fred, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. Back in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, a little piece of good news. Remember how disappointed you and I were when we heard that Obamacare was not going to be repealed? Well, now the tax law change, which is making its way through the House and the Senate, Republican Senate leaders have announced today that they plan to repeal the Affordable Care Act's requirement that Americans maintain health coverage. That will save an estimated $338 billion Ending the mandate would save the money because 13 million fewer people would have health insurance by 2027, but it would save money. And so they are adding it on as part of the tax package because, remember, Obamacare was based on a tax. That was one of the controversial parts of it, that you had a piece of legislation that started in the United States Senate and went to the House. And a lot of us pointed out you can't have tax legislation that doesn't start in the House and go to the Senate. That's the requirement in the Constitution. Well, now the plan is to take the repeal of the Obamacare individual mandate and strap it onto the tax plan, and that would be a great piece of news. Paul Ryan, by the way, has announced mandatory new anti-sexual harassment training policies, and he says that he's going to make every single member of Congress go through this training. First of all, I've heard some studies recently that some of the anti-harassment training can actually make the problem worse, believe it or not. And even if it doesn't, it may not be all that effective. Plus, I'm not sure that Paul Ryan can force somebody who's been elected from a given state to go through some kind of training if they met all the other requirements to be a member of Congress. Let's go to Rob in Mount Vernon. Hey, Rob, thanks for listening on Talk Radio 570. What's on your mind?
Yeah, you bet. I was listening to another very popular host here, and he had mentioned that the gal that flipped off the president, she's up to 80 grand now. And he had mentioned that over the air, and then another individual tweeted him saying, thanks for the update. I'm going to contribute $50 to it. So apparently we still have the haters out there still doing it, obviously.
Okay, just so people, everybody, Rob, everybody else has to catch up with this. There was a woman who became infamous because she was riding her bicycle to work and Trump's motorcade was going by and she raised her middle finger in a rude salute to the president. The picture was taken. She was identified as the person in the picture and the company she worked for, which was a government contractor, fired her from her job. And I think appropriately so. It was an inappropriate thing for her to do and it was a stupid thing for somebody to do if they work for a government contractor. And now there's a GoFundMe to raise a few bucks to, you know, soften the landing for her because she got fired for doing a stupid thing. I take it you don't sympathize with her.
It's a sad state of affairs we live in. And it's really unfortunate that this kind of information is even able to go out over the airwaves because all it does is it feeds the haters. They continue to contribute to the hatred of it. And it just keeps on going and going. And who knows? I mean, I don't know what kind of money she made, but 80 grand, that's not bad for giving a middle finger salute.
Yeah, you're right. Although
I don't support her.
By the way, don't forget to add into that, Rob. My understanding is that if you get money from GoFundMe, you have tax consequences to that. So figure she's going to pay at least 20% to the feds. And if she lives in an income tax state, you know, six or eight or 10% to the state. So a third of that money is going to go away right away. Oh, and by the way, since it's self-employment income, she's probably going to have to pay both sides of Social Security as well. So
hopefully she'll get hammered.
Yeah, I have a feeling the tax system is probably going to hammer her, but good. And I appreciate the update on that. Although why somebody would give money to a cause like that? You've got a young lady who decides to give a rude salute to the person who's the president of the United States. You know, I was never in Barack Obama's presence, but I wouldn't have thought to lift a middle finger to Barack Obama. I didn't like his policies. I didn't like his demeanor. I didn't like the way that he treated Americans. I didn't like the way that he played the race card all the time. But I didn't lift a middle finger to him. And if I had, I wouldn't have been surprised a bit if I got fired from my job, and I wouldn't expect anybody to contribute to that kind of cause. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network, and we'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly. We like to talk about, the things that are going on in the Pacific Northwest. And now on the phone with me is Republican candidate for governor of Oregon, Newt Bueller. It's good to talk to you again, Doc, and it was nice to see you the other night when both of us gave a speech to a Republican group. I'm glad to have you on to talk about this Medicaid overpayment problem that Oregon is not really dealing with all that well. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, good afternoon, Lars. It certainly was nice to appear with you. It was a great group and a fun evening. You know, what can I say? Another example of Governor Brown's lack of leadership leading to another scandal, this time in the Medicaid program in the state of Oregon. You know, the Brown administration negligent in overpaying $74 million to Medicaid providers and then concealing the overpayments until the Oregonian started to investigate the story.
So people understand what's going on here. Obamacare dramatically expanded Medicaid. Medicaid, otherwise known as the Oregon Health Plan in Washington state, they call it, I think it's Apple Care. In any case, the states have monies that they use to spend on medical insurance for poor people. And in Oregon, it's called the Oregon Health Plan. But this Medicaid money was paid out. Do we have any idea why it was paid out incorrectly to the tune of $74 million?
Lars, I've had a front row seat to this whole Medicaid debacle over the last 4 years in the legislature and being on the health care committee. And the program grew very fast. They didn't keep up with it. And they certainly didn't focus on their process of actually paying attention to who was eligible and then how much was being paid. And that's what generated the overpayment of $74 million.
And weren't there people where they were literally signed up for a couple of different medical insurance programs at the same time?
That's right. So they're called dual eligible. So some were signed up for Medicaid and Medicare, which produces a higher rate of payment to these folks. You know, but it shows that the governor once again is not paying attention to running these important agencies. She's just out of the loop. And in the dark, and then when it was determined, then she tries to pass the buck and not take responsibility for it. And that's why I sent a letter demanding action from the governor.
All right, so what action do you want on this?
With all these mistakes, Lars, and this is not the first one. You know, this is $74 million in overpayments. Remember, this started with the $400 million Cover Oregon debacle where that money was wasted. And then recently this summer it was determined that 54,000 people were wrongly signed up, weren't eligible for Medicaid, and that cost the state over $300 million. With that series of problems, it's time to do an independent investigation and find out what's going on with such things as these overpayments. And then we want to have actually the money get back to the taxpayer if it truly was paid out inappropriately.
All right. Now, what kind of outside investigation would actually fit the bill here?
Either the governor or the attorney general can identify an independent counsel to go in and look into the investigation so there's no conflict of interest here. And this has been done in the past, Lars. You know, the governor, in fact, just a year or so ago had an independent investigator for the Department of Human Services when there's problems in that agency that were quite serious.
All right. Now, the governor says she didn't know about any of this. Essentially until she read it in the paper, heard it on the news. Do you buy that?
Regardless if she knew about it or not.
No, I know, but Newt, I want to know. You're running for governor of Oregon. I want to make the best indictment possible of the current occupant of that office. When she says she had no idea that this was going on, should Oregonians believe that?
If that's her word, then we believe it. But we need an independent investigation to confirm it. That's why I'm also asking for emails to confirm that. Trust but verify, Lars. That's how I feel about this situation. It's serious enough that we need to know who knew it and when. Clearly, someone in the Oregon Health Authority knew about it because they already asked for $10 million of the $74 million back. So there's clearly an issue here. And, you know, the governor initially didn't want to give any of the money back, and it wasn't until I sent the letter that she actually said, okay, I'm going to try to get that money back for Oregon taxpayers.
Well, that's the other concern I have is whether or not she's telling the truth about all this, because I think it strains credulity to believe that somehow all of this happened and all the people under the governor who answer up the chain of command to the governor deliberately kept her in the dark, or they kept her in the dark because she wanted to be kept in the dark. It doesn't seem to make sense to me that she just didn't know about it.
It just shows her lack of leadership. Either she was in the dark and didn't create the accountability that we need in these important programs, or she knew about it and she's not being truthful. Either one doesn't reflect very well on the leadership from the governor of the state of Oregon.
You expect any kind of response back from the governor to your letter?
I would just think, out of respect, there would be at least a reply to the letter, right, Lars? I think
I would hope.
That's what I would think. But regardless, tomorrow, when the new director of the Oregon Health Authority is appearing before the House Health Care Committee, I will be asking some pointed questions to try to get to the truth.
Do you think you can get some answers on that tomorrow? Do you think you can get them to tell you that they deliberately kept the governor in the dark about all this, and that she has a good excuse for not knowing what was going on?
I'm gonna probe and ask those types of questions. The difficulty is we have a new Oregon Health Authority director, so there is the ability to play. There's a lack of knowledge in the new team, so they didn't know what was going on, and that's why the importance of having an independent investigation and look into those records and find out exactly who was notified, who made the decisions not to share the overpaying and concealing that this was being done.
I know it's not your style, but I really think that Clueless Katie fits in this case. You may not want to use it on the campaign trail, but that's what I've been describing her as, because I guess from my money, Newt, and I'm talking to Newt Bueller, who's the Republican candidate for Oregon governor, if she's asking Oregonians to believe her words, that she knew nothing about this, then she's admitting to Oregonians that one of the most critical things that the government does and one of the biggest dollar amounts that the government spends, that she had no idea what was going on inside that department, as $74 million or more was misspent, or she did know about it, but she's maintaining plausible deniability because it's more convenient to claim she knew nothing about it and was Clueless Katie than it is to admit that she knew what was going on and let it happen. Either way, it makes her look like a really feckless leader. Newt, what's the website for your campaign for governor?
NewtBueller.com or our Facebook page, Lars, Dr. Newt Bueller.
It is a pleasure to have you on, sir. We'll look forward to talking to you again. And I look forward to talking to Clueless Katie Brown. If she ever decides to come on the program, she has been invited, and we will treat her politely if she comes on. But I am going to ask her, how in the world do you expect us to believe that $74 million went out the door and you, as the governor of Oregon, didn't have the first clue that it was happening, and you want to be reelected on that kind of standard? I don't think so. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails. I've had a few of you suggest to me that GoFundMe income for the young lady who raised the middle finger salute to the Trump motorcade, that GoFundMe income is not taxable, but that's not definitive because the IRS has gone after some people who got money from GoFundMe. And I recall some people who got money from GoFundMe donations who told me that they had a tax consequence. And I guess it all depends on what you were raising the money for and what the money got spent on. But in the case of the young lady who has it replacing her paycheck because she got fired from her job, I'm not sure the IRS would look at that as just individual gifts. Let's go to Alan in Hillsborough. Hey, Alan, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
This bit with Judge Roy Moore.
Yeah.
The woman is accusing her of assaulting him. If that's true, then that's something he should be punished for. But
no, he's passed the statute of limitations, I believe, on the possible assault charge. So this won't even go to court. And one of the sad things about that is there's no opportunity to determine once and for all whether the charge is real or not, is there?
Yeah, this is true. So, to convict this guy on basically what people are saying happened 40 years ago when they didn't come forward 40 years ago is a little bit ridiculous. This idea that somehow people have the right to place these statutory laws that prevent younger people from having sex with older people when they're both have gone through puberty and it's perfectly natural, their hormones and their
pheromones. I don't think we're going there, Alan. Believe me, you're suggesting that you don't like the laws that keep, adult men from having sex with underage girls? Is that what you're saying?
If it's willing consensual sex, then...
Well, here's the thing. In Oregon and Washington...
That's not a natural...
Okay. You know what, Alan? You're not listening at all. Oregon and Washington have laws. We as a society have a right to form laws. If you don't like the laws, you can move to a state that has different laws. But the laws, at least here in the Pacific Northwest, are really clear on adults having sex with kids. If you're an adult and there's more than 3 years difference between you and the age of somebody, it doesn't matter if they're willing or not, because under 18, you can't legally consent to sexual activity, and certainly not with an adult. What kind of person are you anyway?
Those are unconstitutional laws.
Well, show me the court case where it's been found to be. Hey, Alan, you are not the arbiter of the Constitution. Neither am I. The Supreme Court of the United States and the federal courts are. Can you show me a case where, hold on, listen for a second. Can you show me a case where the federal courts have found that age of consent laws are unconstitutional?
Well, it doesn't matter what they find. They found that slavery was constitutional.
See, you know what? Alan, you sound like a perv. I'm sorry, but you sound like a perv. Because you're trying... First, you try to argue it's unconstitutional. And then when I say, well, show me where somebody has taken a law to court. And there are laws that have been taken to court and shown to be unconstitutional. And the minute I say that, you go, oh, it doesn't matter what the courts have said. Well, if you're going to try and use a constitutional argument... It does, in fact, matter what the courts have said. Let's go to Lloyd, who's calling in from Ruston. Hey, Lloyd, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Yeah, good morning. I actually would like prefer to talk about homelessness, but it seems like the hot topic right now is the underage sex.
You can do either one. You want to talk about either one, go for it. But just pick one.
Okay.
All right.
All right. I'll pick the underage sex. I'm going back to the 11th. Sixth grade, when I was about 11 years old, there was this girl. We were asked to stand up and say what we wanted to be when we grew up.
Yeah.
And this one girl, she would be about 12 years old. I want to be a laboratory technician.
Yeah.
To me, she looked like an adult. She was fully developed. She had boobs. And,
okay, stop. I got to tell you, Lloyd, again, what is wrong with you? Are you suffering from the same ailment as the last caller? And what the heck have I stumbled?
No,
it's like it's like being on a boat going fishing and all of a sudden you run into a whole school of really strange stuff. You're going to try and justify adult men having sex with underage girls. No? Then where are you headed? Tell me where you're headed.
Go ahead.
Tell me where you're headed.
I'm saying that about a 14 or 15 year old girl looks like an adult in some cases.
You are. I'm not sure what your point is. If your point is that it's okay for adult men to have sex with underage girls, you're wrong.
No, it's not okay.
Then what is your point? What is your point then? If I'm guessing the wrong one, then you tell me what the right one is, because everybody listening to this right now, I think, is on the same page I'm on. They're thinking Lloyd is somebody who likes little girls, which makes you a pedophile.
No.
Then what is it? Tell me what it is.
I'm saying that in the past, this guy, Roy Moore, is that his name, Roy Moore?
Roy Moore.
Yeah. Nobody's ever heard of him, really. Oh,
baloney. If you lived in Alabama, you'd know exactly who he was. And this shows how, I'm sorry, Lloyd, but it sounds like you are really uninformed, because in Alabama, this man has been on the Alabama Supreme Court twice, which is an elected position. It means he's about as prominent as anybody gets in a given state. The same way you live in Tacoma. So you know who Jay Inslee is because he's the governor of the state. You know certain other political figures. Roy Moore has been a well-known political conservative figure in America for literally decades. And the fact that you don't know him is because you're in Tacoma and Alabama's 1,500 or 2,000 miles away. So you don't know who he is. But the people of Alabama and probably the people in the neighboring states, Mississippi and Georgia, know exactly who Roy Moore is. He's a very well-known figure. So what's your point beyond that? Before you go back to the little girl point you were making at the beginning, which was going nowhere safe, I'll tell you that.
All right.
All right, we'll start over then.
All right.
He is not a household name. However, Woody Allen, Roman Polanski, and Liberace are all household names. All
for
of
the
them,
wrong reasons,
are guilty of the same sin.
True.
And they are
well worse
names,
because Woody Allen actually married his adopted daughter, and Roman Polanski raped somebody.
That's kind of sick.
What's kind of sick? Yes, it is kind of sick. And that's what you were referring to, right?
Right. Yeah.
Well, then why would you start with the 14-year-old girls look like adult women point? I don't get where you were going with that.
Well, I'm just saying that might be a way of justifying his behavior.
No. And if and why would you want to justify his behavior?
I don't even know the guy. Alabama. I've never been to Alabama.
I understand.
I have no idea.
I don't know why you were trying to come up with an excuse for Roy Moore, the man you don't know.
Well, I will sum it up simply, very simply.
I hope so.
Let bygones be bygones.
Hold on a second. If this was your 14-year-old daughter back in the 70s that 32-year-old Roy Moore talked into going into the woods allegedly and talked her into taking her clothes off, and this was your daughter or your granddaughter, Lloyd, seriously, you'd be saying, let's bygones be bygones? Seriously?
I'd probably want to shoot the guy.
Well, there you go. Now, finally, that's the first sensible thing you've said this call. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Woo! Wow, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I had to go almost take a shower after those last couple of calls. I do not understand where they came from, folks. A lot of you have been emailing saying, what in the world happened there? And I'm going to tell you. Like I say on text, IDK. I have no idea. IDK, or maybe America is decaying. Whatever. Let's go to your calls now at 866-A-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let me go to Anthony first. Anthony, how are things in Grants Pass? And welcome to the program.
Thanks, Lars. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Things are good. Thanks for shutting those guys down there.
Whew. Wow.
Your listenership.
Doesn't happen very often, but every once in a while, and I got to call them as I see them. And if these guys think they were misunderstood, the one who thought it was unconstitutional to have laws that protect little girls, holy cannoli. I thought that, the whole point of the Constitution is to protect individual rights, including the rights of little girls. And I would say especially the rights of little girls, but that's just my point of view. Back in the day before the Constitution, she probably would have had brothers that would go out and set somebody straight if they decided to go past the rules, whether they're constitutional or not. But anyway, I'm rattling on. Anthony, what's on your mind today?
I just wanted to talk to you a little bit, and then I'll hang up, take the rest of it off the air. But
sure.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the Affordable Care Act and what it's done in my life. As a self-employed business person. And I think that people are somewhat in the dark from time to time about what this actually represents. As I mentioned, I'm a self-employed person, and I called my insurance agent the other day and said, hey, what options do I have for health insurance? He said, well, go to healthcare.gov.
Yeah.
So I did that, and 2 hours later on the website, it's a really poorly designed website. 2 hours later, I found out the only options available to me started at $1,600 a month for my family of five.
Ouch.
Myself, my wife, and three kids. And then I found out that I'm required to buy one of these programs. So in essence, and it's really bad coverage too. So I have almost $7,000 deductible and $1,600 a month. And so that equates to about $25,000 a year if I just did the math in my head.
Yep.
Further, after speaking with my insurance people, they said that those rates are likely to go up about $1,000 in 2018.
Yep.
So we're looking at $35,000 a year after tax dollars that I'm required to pay, otherwise I'm breaking the law.
Which is crazy,
isn't it? That's what the Affordable Care Act has done to my family.
Yep.
So I go from being a self-employed person with a stay-at-home mom, which is what a decision that we've made, a lifestyle that we've chosen, to all of a sudden now my wife is out looking for a job with benefits, which are very hard to find unless they're full-time, which we don't need. She would work for free if we could have our health care covered. So that's one point I want to make, and I'd be curious to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, stay on the line. And secondly, go ahead and get your second point, too.
Secondly, I would like your listeners to look into, there are faith-based healthcare programs, which are, they're basically co-ops that, and I'm not going to plug the one that I chose or anything like that, but you can look into faith-based cooperative healthcare where you pay a much lower, it's not, they don't even call it premium. It's a much lower monthly obligation. You can get up to, you know, $1 million in coverage. That complies with the Affordable Care Act. And I think that,
are you sure,
that might be a nice option. Yeah.
Well, okay, because here's my initial thought, Anthony. First of all, the situation you describe, unfortunately, is typical of an awful lot of people who are on the Obamacare, you know, private marketplace. And because Obamacare requires all these things to be covered, whether you want them or need them or whether they apply to your life or not. You know, for instance, I'm covered for maternity care, and so is my wife, Tina, even though we can't have any kids anymore. So why would we be covered for something that can't happen to us? Because Obamacare says we have to be, even though we're covered by an employer plan. So it affects everybody. And it affects you especially because you have to buy in the private marketplace, which you were promised would let you keep your doctor and your health care plan. And that was a lie. And you were promised that your premium would go down. That was a lie. It went up. And you were promised all these things. And the promises were a bunch of baloney. And
it didn't go up. It doubled.
I know. And that's the crazy thing is that it's made it unaffordable. And you're effectively, unless your family suffers from some really serious illness, and I hope you don't, you're effectively uninsured right now. Because until you hit that $7,000 mark, you're paying $1,600 a month and getting nothing at all back, right?
Nothing.
Okay. I mean, and again, you hope to keep your family healthy enough that you don't have the serious problems. So maybe you've got some doctor visits and a pharmacy call here or there, but it won't go anywhere near $7,000 a year, which means you'll pay all the premiums and get nothing out of it. You know, one of the reasons that there's a company I've been trying to get to come on the program, not as a sponsor, but just come on and do an interview. They're out of Central Oregon, and I can't recall the name now. It's been almost a year since we started trying to contact this company, but they're selling a catastrophic plan, right? And what it is, yeah. Well, and catastrophic plans became effectively illegal under Obamacare because Obamacare said to qualify, you had to have all the bells and whistles, and then you could cover catastrophe. This company apparently went out during Obamacare, and they're still in business now. They've sold 6,000 or 8,000 people on the policy. And the people who are covered by this have to pay the Obamacare fine because they aren't complying with the mandate, right? You get what
right.
I'm saying?
Yep.
So, but you are covered for catastrophe. And the premium, if I recall right, because the Ben Bulletin did a story on this, and I started trying to call the company, and I just never got a call back. Which happens from time to time.
I think it's called Pacific Source, I believe.
No, I don't think it was Pacific Source. It started with a G, I think. Anyway, the bottom line was for $30 or $40 per person per month. So if your family is a family of four, maybe for $150 a month, you're covered against catastrophe, right? Now imagine how this would apply in your case. So you pay, you know, $1,000 a year to the IRS, the fine for not buying Obamacare. Then you pay another, you know, $1,800 or $2,000 a year for a catastrophic plan. Now you're out $3,000 or maybe $4,000 out of the $36,000 you were talking about. So
the principle though is that if I do that, then I'm in essence breaking the law.
Well, you are, but to hell with it. To hell with breaking the law. I mean, in some cases, maybe that's what Obamacare forces you to do because. Does it make more sense that if, in round numbers, if it's $1,600 a month, then you're paying over $20,000 a year in premiums, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so imagine...
And the deductible. So yeah,
no, but deductible. Forget the deductible. Forget the deductible and follow the math the way I'm doing it. Under Obamacare, you pay $20,000 a year, you get nothing. Under this plan, if you were to say, I'm going to budget $4,000 to pay the fine to Obamacare to pay for the catastrophic plan, and that's it. And then I'm going to bank the other $16,000 that I was paying to Obamacare. And you just tell your wife, hey, Mom, when the kids need to go see the doctor, take it out of the $16,000. When you and I have to go see the doctor or go to the pharmacy, take it out of the $16,000. Which one do you think is going to put your family farther ahead financially?
I hear you for sure.
And so what they've done is they've designed a system so bad that it makes sense to break the law.
Yep. Take a look at I'm going to hang up after this, but take a look at faith-based co-ops. They are compliant with Obamacare, and I got $1 million in coverage. I'm compliant, not breaking the law for about 4 or 5 months.
That's not a bad deal. Anthony, thanks a lot for the call. Now, imagine this. Imagine if Obamacare's best effect is that it forces people to go back to the private sector and get the heck away from anything provided by the government. If it does that, it's a painful way to get there. I mean, it's a painful way to learn that kind of lesson. But maybe it's a good thing if that's what it ends up doing. If it drives America in the opposite direction from single payer and letting the government have anything to do with your health or your family's health. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. Glad to get your phone calls and emails from all over the Pacific Northwest at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Let me go to Christy in Gladstone. Hey, Christy, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Lars. I've just been sitting here listening to the guys calling in this debate about the age of consent. And I have... Yeah. You know, I know a 9-year-old who's starting to get boobs, and that does not mean that she's up for grabs.
That's right.
It does not mean that she goes on the marriage, you know, website or whatever, you know. But, you know, that song 17 by Winger, I think it was back in the day, She's Only 17. That was a very popular song when I was younger. And I knew older men that pursued, you know, younger women constantly, and they would sing that song. So there is, just like those callers, just like a lot of the people that support lowering the age of consent to, say, 13, there is an entire population of people who want to chip away at the laws that protect girls. But I just want to say, for the people who are confused, girls should be in school as teenagers, not mothers. Girls should be talking about, you know, and thinking about going to college, and, you know, it's not puberty that determines whether or not a girl is ready to be, or a boy, to be in a sexual relationship. I think it's the development of the frontal lobe, which is like 25.
Not a bad way to look at it either, and that's one of the reasons that society has at least drawn some minimal lines, which are only designed to be minimums, and that is up till 18, you're protected under the law, and if somebody doesn't like that, I guess they can move to one of the countries where 18 is not the number. Move to Mexico. Move to some other crazy places if you want to.
Well, one of the guys that I know dated a 17-year-old when he was 31 is now in Thailand because 14 is just the norm there.
And that's disturbing.
Yeah. It is. But that's the world we live in, and that's why we continue to fight them. And I want to thank you so much for highlighting this issue.
Well, I'm glad to do it because, Christy, I find this whole thing really disgusting. And let me tell you, people have taken my comments on Roy Moore to be supportive more. They're not. They're kind of down the middle in this sense. I don't know if the charge against him is true. Some of the stuff he has said in interviews in the last day or two is very concerning because I told one of my producers, I mean, Moore was asked, did you ever date, you know, teenage girls when you were in your 30s? Well, I said to my producer, I said, I could tell you definitively, I didn't date teenage girls in my 20s. I certainly didn't date teenage girls in my 30s, you know. And so why in the world would that not be an easy question? Well, Roy Moore kind of danced around it. So does that mean he's guilty of going out with 17-year-old girls back in the day? It disturbs me that some people think that this is then a discussion about the age of consent and what was legal or not legal. It's not. It's about what you think is right. Because if Roy Moore was a truck driver or he worked at the gas station or, you know, he was a welder, nobody would give a damn who he dated when he was 30 and she was 17. But he wants to be a U.S. senator. On the other side of this one, here's what concerns me, Christy. If our new standard of proof is if somebody says you did it, it's true, which is the only thing you've got right now is you have several young ladies who say Roy Moore liked teenage girls 40 years ago. If that's the new standard, then it is going to be then any time an accusation is made against anyone, it is going to be taken to be true. And some of this is an outgrowth of the whole Harvey Weinstein phenomena, which has been like a tidal wave throughout the, you know, the area, the industry of entertainment, movies, television, and all that. And I think some of those, I mean, Louis C.K. at least had the, you know, the good sense, I guess, to come out and say, yeah, I did do those bad things and I'm very sorry for it. Other people are saying, no, I didn't. And then you're going to get a mix of people who are probably accurately accused by some and inaccurately accused by others, because there's a full blown tidal wave going on right now. And it's likely to catch a few people up in it. But do we want to, as a society, adopt the standard that if you're accused, you're done? And it doesn't matter whether it's true or not.
Now, I understand, and I've been living for this tidal wave to come back, this backlash of, you know, predators and preying on young girls. I've been waiting for this. However, just, you know, talking about it isn't going to change anything. You know, I think that our legislature does a lot of symbolic laws and symbolic statements and joint resolutions and all that. I think that it would just be a good idea for all states to say, hey, 18 means 18, even though I think like in Nevada, it's 16. But I think it would be a really good thing to just, hey, set the line, because there are some defense attorneys who say, well, you know, in the country of my client's origin, girls are ready for marriage.
Do you know, Christy, when I started doing talk almost 20 years ago, the Mexican consul, you know, the guy who's the head of the consulate for Mexico here in the Northwest, literally came out and was complaining that there were 25-year-old men locked up in jail on charges. And he literally said, well, back at home, 14-year-olds were available. And I thought, yeah, well, if you want back at home, then you can just go back home, because that isn't the rules here.
It really is. And I love the rules.
Let me tell you one last thing that I may have to bring up tomorrow, because we're toward the end of this hour. Do you know in the Salem Kaiser schools right now, there's a big debate, because Salem Kaiser schools actually strictly enforce the mandatory reporter rule, and Portland and Eugene do not. And there is now a movement of kids who want the mandatory reporter rules relaxed. Because when a young lady...
conversation.
Oh.
This will be a very interesting conversation. I just found some time opening up.
Well, I'll tell you what. All I'm saying is that tomorrow when we talk about, I doubt I'll get any teachers to come on. But I admire the Salem Kaiser schools for strictly enforcing this. But the rule is, if you're under 18, you're not supposed to be having sex with anybody, and only do we sort of excuse it if it involves somebody within 3 years of your age, and only then when no force is used. But there are kids in those schools who are saying, relax the rules. We don't want the teachers to turn us in because of possible child abuse. And that one's wrong.